Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. In another reality, this year would have looked a lot different for me and the Lake Effect team. Like many of our listeners, we had high hopes for the Democratic National Convention here in Milwaukee. We were expecting to be running around looking for delegates to talk with us and giving you day-to-day updates about everything happening on the convention floor. Times have changed, but luckily we're still able to bring you perspectives from analysts and veteran political reporters like NPR's Ron Elving. Yesterday, WUWM hosted a live event all about the convention, the election, and how the pandemic has impacted all of it. We were joined by Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR News. What listeners may not know is that Ron used to be the state capitol bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal. Ron Elving, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Joy. Great to be back in Milwaukee. You know, before I was in Madison, I was a number of years in Milwaukee for the Journal. This was before the merger with the Sentinel. And I covered City Hall. I covered Henry Meyer when he was the mayor. I covered John Norquist a little bit just before he became the mayor. So if those names still mean something to anyone other than as the name of the Summerfest Park, that was my era as a Cub reporter for the Milwaukee Journal.
So you have real Milwaukee roots here.
Oh, yes. I have family in Milwaukee. My daughter lives there. And so, yes, we still feel very close to Milwaukee. My wife also worked for the Journal.
Oh, nice. You know, the cancellation of most of the in-person portions of the Milwaukee DNC, it was certainly upsetting for a lot of us who had prepared for it. But, you know, I was talking to Asma a bit about this. There's this larger question about what it could mean for the Democratic Party here in Wisconsin. So I'd like to start here. Do these conventions generally have an impact on voting, in your experience?
Yes, in a very broad sense, they have had. Historically, I don't think there's any question. We have seen conventions that made a tremendous difference, particularly for the Republicans in 1988 coming out of New Orleans. Mike Dukakis, the Democratic nominee, had a huge lead after his convention in Atlanta, and it melted away. It melted away very quickly, and largely because the Republicans had a very successful convention of their own. That was the nomination of George H.W. Bush. And we had, at that time, thought George H.W. Bush was never going to be president. Of course, he wound up being president himself and then having his son be president for two terms. So conventions can really make a difference, at least in the historic and conventional convention sense. You know, right now, who knows, right? What we saw last night, although I thought it was stirring at many times and meaningful, was not as exciting as seeing 35,000 people in a stadium or in a big basketball arena like Fiserv. So, you know, broke my heart personally that Milwaukee, having waited so long, decades, generations, to get a shot at a national convention, should have its shot and then have it so cruelly taken away by the virus and the crisis and maybe not even to the virus, but just the degree to which it has been poorly handled in this country to the degree that we can't even have a gathering of this kind. Perhaps it would never have been possible once the virus emerged, but it would have been nice to have at least had a little more of a chance.
Yeah. You know, your answer gets to a question I have. Is the fact that the DNC was planned but then didn't happen here in Milwaukee, could that be detrimental to Democrats here in Wisconsin?
I suppose. And it largely depends, I think, on whom you blame for the convention not happening. Now, tonight, the session will be gaveled into order, you know, although that's, again, a kind of a virtual thing, by Tom Barrett. And I'm sure that Tom's going to put the blame where he thinks it is or belongs. Certainly, it should not be put on those who decided that you could not take a chance with the health, not only of the people who are going to be in Fiserv when that was going to be the venue, but all the people of the city, because you're going to have thousands and thousands of people working at any convention. They're going to be bringing the food. They're going to be serving the food. They're going to be cleaning up afterwards. And they're going to be in and about all these delegates coming from 57 places, 50 states, seven kinds of territories, the District of Columbia, and they're going to bring the virus from wherever it is. I mean, it's just like you asked for it. And it came to you from wherever it was thriving in the country. And as we've seen with schools that tried to reopen, and as we've seen in countries that thought they had it licked, it only takes a handful of cases to suddenly get community spread and have a big hotspot again. The chances of that happening were just too great. And I would give credit to those who made the decision fairly early on in the Democratic Party to scale back, to dial back, and then finally to say, look, we just can't have a normal convention for the sake of the health, not only of the delegates who would be coming, but for the sake of all the people in Milwaukee who would be exposed.
Yeah. It's relatively rare in modern history for us to have one-term presidents. And it's relatively difficult to beat an incumbent. When we go back over the last 40 years, there have been two. There's been President Jimmy Carter and President George H.W. Bush. Is there something that stands out as connecting these presidencies and the reasons they weren't reelected?
It would probably be the sense that people had, and I covered the 1980 campaign, and Jimmy Carter was suffering from a number of perceived problems. One, of course, was the economy, where interest rates were extraordinarily high, as people are paying now 3, even 4% for mortgages. At the time, people were paying 12 and 13% for mortgages. And the inflation rate was the reason, and the inflation rate was insane. So the kinds of numbers people today can't even relate to. So people were upset about that. And then there, of course, were the 50 some odd hostages in Tehran being held for a year by protesters there who had taken over the U.S. embassy. That was an enormously humiliating event for the people of the United States. One of them was a young man from Milwaukee. So this was something that was very much on everyone's mind at the time. And when Ronald Reagan increasingly put himself forward as a plausible alternative, an attractive alternative. And now when we think back on 8 years of Ronald Reagan's presidency, it seems a no-brainer that he would have been considered highly acceptable as an alternative to the incumbent president in 1980, but it was a question mark that fall. And he had to sell himself. They only had one debate. It was right before the election. He did extraordinarily well. It was Ronald Reagan at his best. And then what resulted was pretty much a landslide. 1992, George H.W. Bush, whom I mentioned before, had a reasonably successful first term in many respects, but a recession had begun about a year before the election, and that recession might have actually already technically ended in 1992, but people didn't feel that way. People felt like the recession was very much still with them, and they were still very much dealing with its after effects, even if it was over. And the president did not seem to be terribly concerned about that. His advisors kept telling him, there's no recession. Don't cop to it. Don't act as though you think things are bad. They're really not that bad. That was unfortunate. Also, he was dealing with a third party candidate, Ross Perot, who wound up getting 19% of the vote. A lot of it came from people who had voted for Bush in the previous election. And then, of course, speaking of charm and Ronald Reagan, there was a lot of charm associated with young Bill Clinton in 1992. By the way, both Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton are expected to be on the program tonight. So we will see those Democratic characters brought back. And that's how Bill Clinton got to be president. And that was almost 30 years ago. And as you say, the other defeat of an incumbent was 40 years ago. So you're quite right. We, generally speaking, re-elect our presidents.
You know, you mentioned both Reagan and Clinton had this level of charm and charisma. Do we see that in Biden?
No, I don't think people would compare Joe Biden's personality to either Ronald Reagan, longtime Hollywood star, or Bill Clinton with all of his gifts as a person who related well to a wide variety of folks and could do it not only one-to-one, small groups, but he could do it on stage, and he could do it particularly effectively on television. That is not in Joe Biden's quiver. He doesn't really have that particular skill. He's particularly, I think, unsuccessful oftentimes on television as a communicator. Now, last night, for example, I think you saw a lot of people talking about his other strengths. We heard the word decent a lot. We heard empathy a lot. He's not flashy. He's not a Hollywood star. I think that's been pretty well established. Plus, there's also the age difference. Ronald Reagan was getting on in years when he was first elected president, but he wasn't nearly as old as Joe Biden, and he still looked pretty great. Joe Biden, when he first ran for president way back in the 1980s, it's hard to think, but a third of a century ago, we were talking about Joe Biden, presidential candidate. At that time, he was much younger and much more dynamic and was seen as an aggressive speaker. And so no one would recognize, perhaps, some of the things that I'm saying about Joe Biden today. I'm not saying that Joe Biden can't give a great speech on Thursday night or can't have some debate performances this fall that are good. I'm not saying that he won't be enormously charming much of the time. I'm just saying that compared to iconic figures in those departments, such as Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton, those are not his salient strengths.
Now, you touched on this a bit, the economy being one of these. Historically, what are the most important issues for candidates during elections, and how are we seeing that play out in this very atypical election?
First of all, there's the famous, it's the economy, stupid. That came from 1992 in the Clinton campaign, said by his campaign manager, James Carville. And of course, the opposition candidate, the person who's trying to beat the incumbent, is going to stress as the salient, most important issue, whatever is not going well. Now, in the current moment, there are a number of things to stress. Obviously, the virus and the crisis that's got us all in these strange situations. That's number one. Number two is the recession that's resulting from that. And number three, and really I shouldn't put these in an ordinal sense because they're really interrelated and they're of equal importance. The third is the social unrest in the country that resulted not only from the killing of George Floyd, but from the perception. And I think it has been more generally accepted and appreciated than ever before on the part of a wide swath of America that George Floyd was not an anomaly, that the killing of Black people by police has been accepted far, far too long. And that too is an issue that means as much to much of our population as anything else that we're talking about. So to have all three of those at the same time, that's highly unusual. Foreign policy sometimes matters a lot. It certainly did in 1980. But unless foreign policy is the issue, the sailing over everything else issue, such as Vietnam, then it, generally speaking, is not what people vote on. People vote on things that are much closer to home.
Yeah. I should say, we're talking during the DNC, what would have been a much larger event here in Milwaukee, which is now mostly virtual. And that gets to this listener question. Do you think 2020 will mark the end of conventions as we know them or used to know them?
Great question. Is it going to be the end of going to the office 5 days a week from 9 to 6? Is it going to be the end of people feeling that they can only do their jobs with a lot of other people around them? Are we going to change our lifestyle? Is school ever going to be quite the same? One thing most people I've talked to feel right now is more appreciation for what they gained by going to an office or working with their coworkers in physical proximity. Certainly, I teach at American University, and we are totally online this fall. It's nowhere near as satisfying to teach online as it is to teach in the presence of your students. And I generally have the impression that students feel very much the same way. They'd rather be with their peers. They'd rather be with their classmates. They would rather be seeing the professor in a presence. Seeing the professor right there gives you more of a sense that you can question that person, that you aren't just being preached to, as it were, on a screen. I think students really appreciate college for a lot of things other than the classroom too. But even in the classroom experience, which then becomes much more part of the rest of the college experience because you are physically all together on a campus, that's missed. I think it's enormously missed. It's one of the reasons people have been so eager to get the schools back open, even with all the risks. So in that same sense, many of us are going to want to go back to having a political convention 4 years from now. I really hope that the Democratic National Committee will decide to have a regular convention, and they will decide to have it where it should have been this week in the Pfizer. I really owe that to the city of Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin to bring it back to where they had intended to have it and where everyone expected it to be. So for that reason alone, I hope the conventions come back. And one other observation there, if one party brings it back, the other party will go along.
All right. Well, Ron Elving, thank you so much for joining us here today, and thank you so much for your expertise.
Oh, Joy, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Ron Elving is a senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR News and the former State Capitol Bureau chief for the Milwaukee Journal.